Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
What labor is doing in America to push passage of the PRO Act, a win for the metal trades in Tennessee. And today on the show, the government affairs director of the AFL-CIO and the New York City Carpenters Union. Welcome to the Thursday, July 22nd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And once again, when you get an opportunity, just take a minute. It won't take you very long at all. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. And as I indicated, more and more people listening to this show, America's Workforce, broadcast since 1993 and podcasts since June of last year. All right, we have two guests on the show today. Bill Samuel, one of our regulars. He's the head of the Government Affairs Department for the Labor Federation. AFLCIO.org is the website. We're going to get an update on Biden's American Jobs and American Family Plans. Altogether, three proposals. One of them passed. No Republican support. That's the rescue plan, and that money's still filtering in. Mentioned the other day, billions of dollars going to various states. And it's kind of funny, too, because many of these states, half the country, have Republican governors. And the Republicans, as I indicated, not in favor of all that money coming out of the federal government. But they're saying now, oh, you know what? We'll take it. It's helping us out. We'll get into infrastructure. As you know, this was about maybe 4 weeks ago. There was a bipartisan agreement. 11 senators got together, Republicans and Democrats, to work out a scaled-down infrastructure bill. Now, there was a procedural vote yesterday that more or less failed. That is going to be taken up again on Monday. Bill's going to tell us what's going on with that. Many are saying this is not enough. We have to think big. Sherrod Brown is in that camp along with many Democrats. But can they get all the Democrats on board? We'll see. We'll also talk about the PRO Act. This is a week of action for the PRO Act. I'm going to reference what's going on in a couple of states. For the People Act, that deals with voting. And right now, we do not have enough Democrats to move that one forward. We'll talk a little bit about trade. It was an interesting ruling dealing with the USMCA. And that has to deal with labor rights in Mexico. So Bill will touch on that as well. One more issue we'll get into with Bill Samuel is the coal miners' strike going on in Brookwood, Alabama. That's a strike at Warrior Met Company that fell on hard times. They regrouped, and a fund purchased them, BlackRock Fund. So basically, Wall Street's running a coal mine, if you can imagine that. Bottom line is, strike has been going on for months, and the miners are going back to Wall Street next Wednesday, July 28th, and they're asking for supporters to come out and join them from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. right on East 52nd Street. And you can find more on the mine workers website, umwa.org. So Bill Samuel will be our first guest. Later in the show, we're going to join with Paul Caperso. Paul Caperso is with the New York City District Council of Carpenters. Talk about a big union. This district council is a representative body comprised of 9 individual locals and 20,000 union members. The district council functions as the voice for thousands of New York City's most dedicated and skilled carpenters. We're talking millwrights, dock builders, timbermen, cabinet makers, floor coverers, industrial workers. The New York City District Council of Carpenters is a fully democratic body. Its leadership is elected by union members and only union members. A little background on Paul. He's the president of that council. He's got about 30 years of experience in the union. He started there when he was 17, 1987. He wanted to be the best of the best. So he worked his way from journeyman to lead carpenter to foreman, general foreman, and to a superintendent for a interior systems contractor. He then became a part-time instructor, teaching apprentices and journeymen at the Carpenters Training Center while continuing to work in the field as a foreman. And then he moved up the ranks of the union. So he's got a very interesting past, loves his job. And we're going to get into, well, first of all, the workload. And then we're going to touch on unscrupulous contractors, wage theft, and tax fraud, which is so damn prevalent in the trades. You got a lot of these fly-by-night contractors that come in there, pay under the table, and, you know, they get screwed, and the local governments get screwed because they're not taking the taxes out. Building back better with unions. That's what it's all about. So, Paul Caperso will be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Got a statement here from Rich Trumka on the Pro Week of Action, which started last Saturday and it'll end this Sunday. Rich says it's about more than just passing a piece of legislation. It's about rebalancing our economy and our democracy so workers have more power. That's what it's all about. It's about rejuvenating our movement with safe in-person events. And most of all, it's about building back better with unions. Since the start of the pandemic, we've been fighting tooth and nail for the dignity and respect that workers deserve. Now, it's up to us to get this bill past the finish line. Then the next work of growing our movement will begin. Now, we're going to get into specifics with Bill Samuel on that because still, three Democratic senators are on the fence with the PRO Act. That being said, we're seeing a lot of areas in the country that are stepping up. Over the weekend, the Southern Indiana Area Labor Federation set up a Protecting the Right to Organize Act table at a four-county Democratic Party town hall event, which was all about the American Rescue Plan. The Area Federation team was able to talk with dozens of union members and party activists about the importance of passing the PRO Act, and they collected more than 100 signed postcards to drop into the mail to U.S. Senators Todd Young and Mike Braun. The event was held in Evansville, Indiana. It was part of a series of town halls that the Democratic Party is hosting. Quote here from the head of the Federation team. That's Eric Wagerman, and he comes from the SMART Union. That's connected to the sheet metal workers, air and rail. It's a big group there. With passage of this landmark legislation, the 1% will no longer have free rein to continue their attacks on everyday American workers. Without passage of this legislation, employers will continue to misclassify our work and diminish our worth, he said. Passage of the PRO Act will allow people of all different backgrounds a chance at improving their economic well-being. And if you go to the Labor Federation website, you can see what's been going on in various parts of the country. And last night, the Labor Federation hosted more or less a roundtable. It was led by Liz Shuler, Secretary Treasurer of the Labor Federation. And they connected with, I'm looking at five or six other union leaders, many of them young union leaders around the country, to talk about what needs to be done to push Congress and do the right thing. Do the right thing. For 2 weeks, the members of the Air Engineering Metal Trades Council at the Arnold Air Force Base, this is in Tennessee, they went on strike over wages, health care, long-term disability benefits, and dignity in the workplace. Well, the members stood together in solidarity, fighting for a fair contract. And after days of tough negotiations, management and the union reached a 3-year agreement that includes wage increases of 9.25%. This while maintaining health care coverage and the long-term disability program. The union also celebrated what it said is the largest wage package in the council's history. And this is the time in more than 40 years that it didn't have any givebacks. Wow. James Hart, who we featured on the show about 2 months ago, comes from the United Association. He's 100% New York. I tell you, I love talking to that guy. He said, they tell us that membership in the South has to operate smartly. Well, the members of the Metal Trades Union in Tennessee not only acted smart, but stood their ground and fought for what was right. And they won in their struggle for fair wages, good health care, and dignity on the job. And the contract, well, it was ratified last Friday. So hats off to the Air Engineering Metal Trades Council and to James Hart, president of the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Good stuff there. Good stuff there. One more here before we break. This week, the California State Appellate Court permitted a group of Postmates couriers alleging that the delivery platform withheld wages and tips, and they may proceed on claims filed on behalf of the state of California despite a strict arbitration agreement signed by the plaintiffs. Here's the deal. The class of drivers claim misclassification as independent contractors. Again, we see a lot of this. And they're seeking penalties for underpaid wages. The claim is filed under the Private Attorneys General Act, which deputizes employees to sue for labor code violations on behalf of the state. That's pretty interesting. Following the California precedent, the lower court held and the appeals court affirmed that the claims are not able to be thrown into arbitration. So a worker cannot waive a right to bring a representative action on behalf of a state government. So the case, it's called Wins versus Postmates, is part of at least five other coordinated suits against Postmates in San Francisco. The appellate courts in California, including the first and second district, have refused to compel arbitration of two of unpublished rulings. And a judge in Baltimore has approved a $29 million settlement awarded to poultry plant employees by their employer, Pilgrim Pride. I've seen them in the stores many times. The plaintiffs allege antitrust violations involved a scheme to drive down pay for the industry's workforce. Now, that deal allows Pilgrim to exit the proposed class action and requires it to cooperate in building a case against the remaining defendants accused of colluding to depress wages. And that includes Tyson Foods, Hormel, Sanderson, Purdue, Cargill, Butterball, let's see, Mountain Air Farms, Pico Foods Incorporated. That's a lot of big players. Definitely a case to watch there. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bill Samuel on behalf of the Government Affairs Department of the Labor Federation.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And, of course, we're on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all part of the AFL-CIO. Speaking of which, we have the Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation out of Washington on our live line, Mr. Bill Samuel. Bill, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Thanks for having me. Great.
Well, we have a lot to cover, but I'm sure you and so many people watch Jeff Bezos, the CEO, or I should say the outgoing CEO of Amazon. He's stepping down. He went into space 2 days ago, and he made this comment of the $5.5 million expenditure. He said, I want to thank every Amazon employee and every Amazon customer because you guys paid for all of this. So seriously, I can't even read this with a straight face. So seriously, for every Amazon customer out there and every Amazon employee, thank you from the bottom of my heart very much. It's very much appreciated. Well, obviously, with that being said, a couple of people have come forward, like Robert Reich, the former labor secretary under Bill Clinton, and now a professor of public policy at the University of California in Berkeley. He sent out a tweet that Bezos, let's remember, he's the guy that has crushed unionizing attempts for decades. Amazon workers don't need Bezos to thank them. They need him to stop union busting and pay them what they deserve.
I don't think Bezos even recognizes it. Just shows how out of touch he is, how ironic it was that he was thanking his employees for making his space ride possible.
I know,
Pay them a living wage.
Well, far from a living wage. And then John Nichols, one more comment here. John's been on the show a number of times. He is one of the great writers at The Nation magazine. He said he's fine with sending Bezos into space as long as he pays his taxes here on Earth. And he pointed out in his article, in 2007, Bezos, then a multi-billionaire and now the world's richest man, did not pay a penny in federal income taxes. And years after that, the same kind of thing happened.
Yeah. Well, he's not alone. There are a lot of billionaires who haven't paid
any taxes. Oh, I know.
And a lot of corporations who haven't paid any corporate taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't pay any, and Amazon didn't pay any. And General Electric was in that camp for many, many years as well. Mm-hmm. All right. That's another story. I want to get into infrastructure. And as you know, the two sides got together. We're talking about this scaled down package. What is it, like $1.2 trillion? What's going on with that right now?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of competing efforts right now. I think the good news is, I think, you know, when all is said and done, we're going to end up with some significant federal spending on infrastructure that's going to create a lot of jobs, a lot of good union jobs. There's a bipartisan effort underway, which sort of stalled yesterday when the Republicans blocked action on it. They blocked the Senate from debating it. They claimed it wasn't ready. You know, they need more time, which is fine. We're only in July. And then there is a more partisan effort the Democrats are preparing in case this bipartisan bill doesn't get done, or even in addition to it, because it's, as you said, it's $1 trillion, which sounds like a lot now. But what Biden is proposing, which I think really meets the moment, is, you know, $4 trillion. Having not, you know, we just haven't spent money on infrastructure for decades. We haven't kept up with the need, which is why we have lead pipes and crumbling bridges and airports that are an embarrassment. You know, broken down transit and rail systems. All this would be fixed by the Biden plan. It's a big investment, and it's necessary, and we can afford it. And we have low interest rates. We haven't been spending what we should. We're not spending nearly what other democracies are spending on their infrastructure. So some combination, there may be a bipartisan bill, $1 trillion, there may be the more partisan effort the Democrats can do by themselves without any Republican votes, using the budget process, which enables the Senate to take up bills without the threat of a filibuster. So all told, we're hoping that we'll be in the range of $4 trillion by the end of the year. But, you know, the Congress is, you know, it's not a pretty process, so there are going to be a lot of fits and starts. But Biden's focused on it, and so is Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. So we're still encouraged. Now there are, you know, millions of details. You know, when you got a $4 trillion bill, there's a lot of details to work out. How it's going to be paid for, how much of it needs to be paid for, and then what all the labor protections and standards and allocations of the money are going to be, you know, contained in there. So it's a lot of work going on. We're not discouraged. Again, this is, you know, we elected President Biden to do big things, and I think that's what's happening right now.
And the people want it, without a doubt. Yeah. Paying for it. I want to get into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because Biden wants to raise taxes on those making $400,000 a year and up. The Republicans are saying no. And then I'm reading, I just read this the other day, a couple progressive publications are saying some of the Republicans are trying to privatize our infrastructure, which, and you know this, Bill,
yeah,
is not a good track record. In Daily Kos reported that the city of Chicago, I remember this story, they sold 36,000 parking meters to a Wall Street firm. This was some years back. And they collected $1 billion in revenue. Now, the drivers in Chicago will pay an additional $11 billion in parking rates through the agreement. Why? Because it goes 75 years.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. But I totally agree with that. We, you know, public resources should remain public, whether it's
right.
Highways, parking meters, water systems, you know, electricity. You know, there's this theory that Wall Street will invest because there's, you know, and that can take the place of taxpayers' dollars and federal spending. The problem is Wall Street only invests if they can make money. If we want to make
right.
all these profit-making activities, we're going to pay more for them. That's what profit is. It's over and above what it costs to provide the service. That's profit. That's why our health system is so screwed up, because it's a profit-driven system. And public resources, whether it's, again, roads, electricity, water, you name it, should remain in the public domain. It should be handled by public employees, and there shouldn't be a, you know, an extra, you know, 10-20% built in for somebody to take profit, to make a profit off it. And, you know, and as soon as it's less profitable, they walk away from it, by the way. That's the other problem. There's no real commitment to it. So this, and this is one of the things that's holding up the infrastructure bill right now that we were just talking about, is this debate about how much what they call recycling of assets, selling off things like the TVA, or privatizing transit systems or other transportation modes. How much will Republicans insist on? Democrats are pushing back, and they have to be firm on this. I will say, although I said a moment ago I'm optimistic, I think in the end we will something will pass that's going to be significant in terms of infrastructure spending. But Republicans are throwing up lots of roadblocks. I mean, this is typical. McConnell, you know, hasn't changed. He doesn't want to see Biden succeed. He doesn't want to give Democrats victories, because then they run on that in 2022, and then he has, you know, less of a chance of taking back the Senate. So he's going to make it as hard as possible, and Democrats are just going to have to tough it out and be strong. And I think they will be. I mean, I think we have good leadership now in the House and Senate. We've got some moderates who want to sell out. I won't name names, but I think in the end, I think we're going to do pretty well. That's my prediction.
And McConnell has a history of that. When he was the Senate majority leader with the Democrats under Trump, what was it? Close to 400 pieces of legislation, good legislation. One of them was infrastructure that went nowhere,
yeah.
Right?
No, and go back to when President Obama was president. He made it clear that he was going to do what he could to make Obama a one-term president, which, by the way, he failed at. But he did succeed at slowing down and really crippling a lot of the Obama agenda. The only thing, you know, the big things Biden got done, President Obama got done, was health care. But after that, really, for the last 6 years of his term, once the Republicans took back majorities, it was very tough to get legislation passed. He ended up doing a lot by executive order, like DACA.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't get Congress
right.
to deal with immigration, so he took it on himself to do it. He showed some guts. But he's up to the same thing now. You know, it's now all of a sudden the deficit matters. Didn't matter when Trump was president. And it's clear, you know, McConnell said back in May that 100% of his efforts were going to be to defeat Biden's agenda. I mean, he says that loud, what you imagine Republicans may be thinking but shouldn't say. So, you know, it wasn't defeat, you know, ending the pandemic, putting Americans back to work. That wasn't where 100% of his energy was going to be put. It was going to be put to defeating the Biden agenda that the American people had just voted in. I mean, they just elected, you know, 4 or 5 months, 6 months earlier. So he hasn't changed.
By a wide margin, I might add, too. Seven, 8 million?
Exactly, 7, 8 million votes. So things aren't, you know, it's not going to be easy getting the Biden agenda done, but there are some procedural tools Democrats have, like this budget reconciliation process, which can't be filibustered. It only takes 50 votes, but that means keeping Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and other moderate Democrats on board, because we only have 50. We can't lose one.
Right.
And that's really why things are right now looking kind of messy, because Democrats are Democrats. They're not all that organized, and we have to get all 50. Now, we did that yesterday, by the way. We, the Democrats, did that and approved on a 50-vote tie, basically, broken by the vice president. They confirmed Jennifer Abruzzo to be the NLRB general counsel. She's a CWA lawyer, very smart, accomplished lawyer, and she is now, as of yesterday, confirmed as the NLRB general counsel. That's a really important job. That the general counsel decides which cases to take, you know, which companies to go after.
Right. Right.
So Democrats can get their act together. They just have to keep at it from now until hopefully November 2022, when they pick up a few seats, and then, you know, we have one or two to spare. We don't need all every single one of them to vote with, to vote the same way.
Now, with Jennifer Abruzzo, what was the complaint? Why couldn't they get Republicans on board with
her? You know, what they say is that Jennifer Abruzzo was chosen, as were hundreds, maybe thousands of other experts. She served on the Biden transition. You know, that they brought in a lot of people to work on the transition after the election, between March and the inauguration in January, and prepare for the takeover of all these government agencies. By the way, I don't think she worked on the NLRB transition. It was more the Labor Department transition. And Biden, on January 21st, when he became when he was inaugurated, he fired the NLRB general counsel. That was a recommendation we made, the AFL-CIO and a lot of other Democrats, and he did it. We thought it was a fabulous move, because the NLRB general counsel had been doing a lot of terrible things, anti-union things, you know, one of the worst general counsels in terms of workers' rights anybody could remember. So she was on the transition along with, as I said, 1,000 other people, and the Republicans now claim, well, she was on the transition, Biden fires her predecessor, then names her to the post. There's got to be some funny business there, completely made up, you know, paranoia, whatever. But every Republican fell for it, and you know, that's sort of the way things go. On the other hand, yesterday in the Labor Committee, the two Republicans did vote for two NLRB board members. There are two vacancies on the NLRB. There's, you know, it's a five-member board. And two Republicans, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, voted to advance two labor lawyers to sit on the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. And with that vote will go to the floor, you know, hopefully this month. So there's a little bit of bipartisanship every now and then, if you know where to look for it.
And once again, that general counsel you were talking about, Peter Robb is his name. He's the guy. He's a union buster. The guy that worked in the Reagan administration that set up the plan to fire the air traffic controllers Reagan took office.
That's right. We knew what he was about. You know, his career started, 40 years ago, and he'd been at it ever since. A darling of the right wing, the right to work crowd. And Trump put him in charge of the National Labor Relations Board as general counsel, which is the board, by the way, which is supposed to protect workers' rights. Everybody thinks it's supposed to be this sort of neutral, you know, not pro-business, not pro-labor. I mean, that's true, but the point of the National Labor Relations Act and the National Labor Relations Board is to enforce the law which protects workers' right to organize and bargain. Republicans and Peter Robb saw it sort of in an upside down, you know, typical Republican fashion. It's to remain neutral, which is not the purpose of the National Labor Relations Act. It's supposed to be protecting workers.
Right.
Without that, you know, companies can do whatever the heck they want. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's a lot of people in Congress that would love to do away with the NLRB. You know,
no, they've tried to defund it. Republicans tried to defund it many times, and thankfully, Democrats, you know, got in the way of that. So it's functioning. We're going to have a Democratic majority soon. As soon as these two members get confirmed, we'll have a Democratic or a pro labor general counsel, and it will get back to work, which is
good.
It's short of getting the PRO Act done, which we're going to get done at some point in the next year or so. We at least need a functioning National Labor Relations Board.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I have to take a break. Because every time I'm talking to you the last couple of months here, we still got those three Democrats, Bill. I mean, come on.
I have good news on that. So when we come back,
okay. Hold that thought. I've been talking about this all week. I said, I can't wait to talk to Bill. We gotta move the needle in the right direction here and get that PRO Act passed. All right, Bill Samuels on our live line. He's the Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation. And Paul Caperso will be joining us later. And he is with the New York City District Council of Carpenters. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And again, we are available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Bill Samuel. Bill, the Government Affairs Director for the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org. All right, Mr. Samuel, you're telling me at the end of the last break that there's some good news on those three Democrats, 2 in Arizona, 1 in Virginia. We got 47 Democrats, but we're trying desperately to get to 50 to pass the PRO Act. Of course, you got the deciding vote there with Kamala Harris. And, of course, we have to deal with this filibuster situation. But what's the good news? What's the story here?
Right.
Bill?
So the good news is we've had 47 co-sponsors for months now. We need 50, to be in the game. And yesterday, I'll read you a headline from Huffington Post. Senator Mark Kelly says he supports overall goals of PRO Act, and it ought to be taken up by the U.S. Senate. So that's 48. Now, we know that even among the 47 co-sponsors, there will be a process to amend the bill if and when it gets to the Senate floor, hopefully to improve it. It's not perfect. It was drafted about 2.5-3 years ago. So there's going to be a process where senators are going to have to come together and agree on the contents of the product. But we have to get a vote on it. It's got to be advanced to the Senate floor. Mark Kelly has now basically said he's ready to begin that. Mark Warner has essentially said the same thing in various places. We're trying to get that clarified and maybe get a headline out of him like we got yesterday from Mark Kelly, that would be 49. Again, they're going to say, as Angus King from Maine, Senator, said when he co-sponsored the bill, I would like to see some changes, but I'm ready to have the debate and vote on it. So that's 49. The remaining holdout right now is Kyrsten Sinema, also from Arizona. We think she will not, you know, withstand the pressure to be 50 for very long. She, you know, she's a Democrat. She needs Democrats to renominate her in 2 years. She needs labor to support her in Arizona. And she's, you know, she's not conservative. She considers herself an independent at this point. And it may take a little more work to get her. But if we get to 49, I think getting to 50 is not that hard. It may take a little more time, but we have time. And then we're still talking to Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Republican, who, as I said yesterday on the help at the Labor Committee, she did vote to advance two Democratic nominees to the NLRB, two pro-labor, actually labor lawyers, to serve on the NLRB. So we have some hope for Lisa Murkowski. So we'll have 50 or 51 at that point. And then, as you said, we have to deal with Senate rules. We have to restore democracy to the Senate so that a majority can actually pass legislation, not a supermajority. And I think that may happen this year because partly the debate over the PRO Act, but a lot of other bills that are getting held up by the filibuster, including voting rights. So, you know, this is a game of inches. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to get all this done all at once, maybe not even in the first session of Congress. Or in this session of Congress. But I think everything is moving in the right direction. Popular opinion, you know, support for the PRO Act, support for voting rights, it's all going in the right direction. So, we're pretty hopeful.
65% of the American public in favor of unions, and that is a fact. Several polls have indicated that.
Right.
I'm sorry if I seemed impatient, but it's good to hear the good news from you. And I know it's like moving a mountain. I mean, these conservatives, they're so dead set against moving America forward. And like you indicated in the first segment, giving Biden a win. They don't want to do that. They don't want to do it in any shape or form.
Right.
You mentioned voting. Can we pick up on that, the For the People Act? And it seems like, I don't know, is that a dead issue or what?
I don't think so. You know, we've got a couple dozen Texas legislators here. They came to the AFL-CIO last week, and we held a press conference with them. And they, I think they're, you know, again, shining a light on what Republican legislatures are doing around the country to restrict voting, to make it harder to vote. I think, you know, we need that kind of public attention. I think, you know, again, public vastly supports voting rights. You know, we're now at the one-year anniversary of John Lewis's death. He's really the father of the Voting Rights Act, 1965.
Sure.
I think it's possible. I think again, there are probably 50 Democratic votes for the Voting Rights Act, for the People Act, two separate bills, but getting at the same thing. Chuck Schumer is just going to have to bring it back to the floor, and they're going to have a debate about Senate rules and make it clear that, you know, the majority has to be in charge. You can't give Mitch McConnell, a veto pen, by controlling 40 votes. Mm-hmm. So that's the goal. But we'll come back to it. I'm certain of that.
Well, we have to, especially with what's going on in all these state legislatures. Right now, 15% of the voting public, they are in states where they have restricted the right to vote. 15%.
But also made it possible for Republican legislatures to overturn the vote.
Yeah.
You know, they're changing the rules and how they count the vote.
Real scary, real scary. Hey, are you keeping your eye on this coal miner strike, the Warrior Met strike in Alabama?
I am, since that's where I, you know, got my start 10 years at the United Mine Workers. Yeah, this is, you know, an example of Wall Street, you know, hedge funds, private equity, buying, you know, coal mines, newspapers, you name it, running them into the ground and then stripping the profits and leaving the workers behind. So this is a fight that we have to win. And I think I put my money on the United Mine Workers in this case.
I want to tell you, there's a lot of solidarity. They did a march to Wall Street. This was about a month, month and a half ago, and they're doing it again next Wednesday. They'll be leafleting outside BlackRock. Now, BlackRock Fund Advisors, that is the they're the largest shareholder of Warrior Mets, and the company is now profitable. It's now profitable. There was a time they were bleeding money, and they were in bankruptcy, but that has all turned around, and part of the conditions was, hey, you know, when you do better, help us out. And they're not doing that. That's right. The problem right now.
Right. Share it with the people who made it possible for you to make a profit.
Shared prosperity. Imagine that, huh? All right.
Yeah.
All right, my friend, I'm going to let you go. Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director for the Labor Federation, AFL-CIO.org. Thank you for the good news on that pro act.
Yeah, all right. I'll see you next month.
I feel better now. You take care. We'll talk to you next month, all right?
Bye.
All right, quick break. When we come back, Paul Caperso will be joining us on behalf of the New York City District Council of Carpenters.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to New York City right now. And joining us on line number two is Mr. Paul Caperso. And Paul is president of the New York City District Council of Carpenters. And I want to tell you, this is a big group. We're talking 20,000 union members. The voice for thousands of New York City's most dedicated and skilled carpenters, millwrights, dock builders, timbermen, cabinet makers, floor covers, industrial workers. They got it all. And they're in the heart of New York City. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Good, good, good. I see you started in the union, what, 1987, different time in America. You're 17 years of age. What attracted you to the Carpenters Union? Let's start right there.
So, you know, always around a kitchen table about unions, and my family had been in the Carpenters Union. I have my older cousins who were in the union, and that kind of, you know, I was fooling around a little bit in high school. I thought I'd take a gap year. Of course, we didn't call it a gap year back then. And I said, let me go to work for a little while. So I went to work, and then here I am today, right? I never went back. I continue to work in the Carpenters Union. I joined the apprenticeship program. I worked my way through the apprenticeship program, and then I continued to go on in my career. I subsequently became a shop steward. And then I went back and I became a foreman, and then a general foreman and a superintendent before I went to work full time with the union. But I always supported my local in various positions. You know, probably from 2000, I think I've been a delegate since 2000 was when I first got my start, and it's been great. You know, it's been a great run. I really enjoy it. I had the opportunity yesterday to be back on a job site, and I missed that atmosphere too. I appreciate everything everybody does, my members, the conditions that they work in. You know, with COVID made it a rough year too, so that was a little bit different. But yeah, I've been here for a while, man. The ups and downs. I was in the Trade Center, unfortunately, in 9/11, and seen a lot of different things, and my perspective just kind of changed and grew as I got older.
Wow. You were there in the Trade Center on that day, almost 20 years ago?
Yeah, I actually was working there, and, you know, circumstance, right? It's all about circumstance. I was supposed to go to a meeting. I wound up not going to the meeting and walked out of there. And as I was walking away, the plane hit the North Tower, you know, and then subsequently it continued to happen from there. But, you know, yeah, I was there.
You know, that's, like I said, going to be 20 years. The anniversary is going to be on a Saturday. We don't do the show on a Saturday, but I'd like to have you back maybe the day before that so we can reflect on that day in American history. But
sure, no problem. That'd be interesting. That'd be great.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind.
Right now, there's a couple things I want to get into. And it's great that you're in New York City because I know you have a strong union town. I mean, we talk to a lot of people on this show. I mean, we had the guy from Tennessee, the Labor Federation in Tennessee, right to work state, and North mm-hmm. Carolina, that's another one. And I feel bad for the political climate in various parts of the country. But New York, I'm sorry, it's not like that. Not like that at all. Carpenters Rise, what's this all about? I guess it's a multi-year plan that you had a big part in, right?
Yeah, so what we did was our political director, who subsequently retired, and we knew that we had to redevelop or redefine our political program. So we engaged a consultant, we engaged Grossman Solutions, and we decided to put together an aggressive plan. And in a short period of time, we put together an aggressive plan that brought our members back into the participation side, right? We set up training, explained to them what politics was, what carpenter politics meant. You know, examples of carpenter politics is the replacement of the Tappan Zee Bridge or the Gothels Bridge, big projects, and even the Javits Center expansion, you know. But then educating our members, right? So we engaged our members, probably trained about 1,500 people in a short period of time to get prepared for city council seats. There were 36 city council seats with about 256 people running, and we had to dive through that. We engaged our members. Our members really got involved with that. They did the interview process first before they served it up to the executive leadership. And then we took a bold move. You know, we had the mayoral, the Democratic primaries. We took a step out of the box. We waited. We didn't follow along with the rest of the trades, and we subsequently supported Eric Adams, and that wound up to be a good position with that too. But it's learning how to build that coalition, right? And for us, it was, you know, explaining it to our members why it's important to do that. You know, a few years back, we managed to engage with the city agency through the building trades and create these PLAs that kind of locked in the city agency work, which kind of helped us even more. And then it was kind of explaining to the members of how we got that work and why it was important. It actually was a stopgap in those declining years where there was no work or an economic downturn, we would still have that city agency work where we'd be able to put members to work, you know? And it was doing that education piece, and it worked out for us. You know, we still got about two more years left in the election cycle, unfortunately, in New York. It gives us the opportunity to get more members involved, and they take ownership of it, right? And that helps us as well, right?
Engaging the membership, that's what it's all about. That's good. Moving forward. Well, it sounds like you're doing a really good job there, but there's still a lot of slime balls out there, Paul. You know what I'm talking about. The so-called unscrupulous contractors, they're everywhere in America, and that includes New York City. What's the situation there, and how are you dealing with that?
So part of the political process was we started implementing a bill, the wage fraud bill, right? 2766, and it's just waiting now for the governor's signature. But every day we fight those wage fraud contractors and those unscrupulous contractors, and we try to educate the public. You know, we've had issues with, you know, a variation of different entities, large and small. You know, that decide that, you know, because of the climate and the political climate, that they would take advantage of people, right? And And they seem to, some of these big institutions seem to have no issue with maybe paying somebody, you know, cash or employing undocumented workers or taking advantage of them, right? You know, we want to see everybody get an opportunity, the same opportunities that we had or I had when I joined the union, right? Good salary, availability of health care, and a good retirement, you know? And here we have that fight every day. You know, we have that fight with those unscrupulous contractors and developers. And, you know, we keep on fighting along through demonstrations and engagement of the population of the city. And New York's pretty good. They're an active city, social media. You can find us on social media, hashtag Why the Rat. You know, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're always out there, you know, fighting that good fight. We bought a sign truck. I don't know if you've ever seen those big sign trucks. And everybody really likes the sign truck, and some people love to hate it. You know, when it's driving around Manhattan and it's telling you that you're an unscrupulous developer, and we give you a name, your email, and maybe where you can find them on the weekend.
You don't take any crap, do you?
No, you know, you got to keep fighting, right? You got to push back with everything you have, right?
Yeah. You know, I was reading a book on Trump. This was some years ago, and he was slick in what he did, because he'd hire a contractor, and then that contractor would hire a sub. And you know how this works, Paul. Sure. And then the sub would hire another sub, and then obviously down the road, you've got people just trying to, slide by, pay people under the table. There was a story where I guess the sub was trying to pay the people in vodka. They had some immigrants from Poland. I would imagine that sounds like another show. I imagine you've got all kinds of stories like that, don't you, Paul?
Yeah, you know, you'd be surprised. You know, one of the big things they do, like you said, you'd find out in some of these investigations that they would get a guy who was a labor broker, right? They'd sub the job to him. And the irony was, you know, even when you, from being on the other side of it, right? When I would go in and they would want my insurance certificate, my certificate of workman's comp, you know, and I asked these questions at the table, and everybody's looking at me like I'm crazy, right? But they let them get away with that stuff, right? And they're okay with, they seem to have a clear conscience of saying, hey, you know, everybody else is doing it, why can't I do it, right? Mm-hmm. And we try to bring it to the attention of politicians and everybody else and educate them and show them that you may have a guy who's listed as a deli in Wisconsin, and he's the prime on a job, and he's just subbing it down and tearing it down. And then you'll find out that, you know, it's kind of like musical chairs or a pyramid scheme, right? The poor guy at the bottom of the pyramid is the one who gets screwed. You know, they don't get paid. You know, they're working for free. There's no benefits, or they got to kick back to the contractor a percentage of their salary. If they do happen to pay them in checks, it generally results in them, you know, handing over the cash, you know, and it's back to the prime contractor. But it's that education piece and trying to educate the public as well, right? And through shows like this, you know, hopefully enough people listen and they follow along and they send letters to their congresspeople and they ask them to stop it, right? And there's more accidents, to be quite honest, on those jobs, right?
Yep.
Most of the deaths and the accidents that occur happen on non-union jobs. That's factual, right? It's factual in just about every state, New York as well, right? And then, you know, and the demonstrations that we do are just to kind of educate those people, right? To educate the common person who's going to work or maybe walking under a scaffold and maybe rethinking that scaffold that they're working under, right? That maybe been put up. You know, they just did a story the other day where the building department in New York City finally, you know, woke up and said, hey, wait, some of these scaffolds that are up, we have no permits for, or they were never permitted, or nobody ever went back and followed up on a violation, you know? And we highlight that stuff, right? We got to highlight that if nobody else wants to take it.
You have to. You have no choice in the matter. Paul, we're just about out of time. I love talking to you. I want to bring you back right before the 20th anniversary of 9/11. So look for that. That'll be the second week, right after Labor Day. Paul Caperso is his name. I should give the website here. It's nycdistrictcouncil.com. You can also check them out on Facebook, Carpenters NYC, and follow them on Twitter, Carpenters NYC. Brother, you take care, and I promise we'll keep in touch, all right?
Thank you. I appreciate it. You guys be well, and thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Anytime. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, our segment with working class perspectives and the steelworkers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.